away. Welcome back, everybody, to Sports Talk. He's Adrian Broaddus. I'm Steve Kaplowitz. Coming your way right here, 600 ESPN El Paso. We're on until 6:30. Chihuahuas will be back home tonight. Tim Haggerty with the call. And guess what, El Paso? You've got us the entire show with no guests lined up. Outside of Hags coming on with us in about the last segment of the program. 2 hours plus of phone calls, tweets, comments in the app. That's how we've got. We have an open show today. I can't remember the last time we had an open show. But today is Open Show Tuesday. So you have the opportunity to weigh in on anything you want. Anything you want. It could be the NBA playoffs. It could be the NHL playoffs. It could be Major League Baseball. It could be Chihuahuas baseball. It could be boxing. It could be pro wrestling. It could be UTEP, New Mexico State, high school, Little League. You want? Hey, I got news for you, okay? Speaking of Little League, listen to this, okay? A friend of mine whose name will not be revealed, okay, has a little one who is playing coach pitch baseball for the first time ever, okay? First time. Started yesterday. And when he was up to bat at his first practice, his coach told him not to move. Then he hit the kid on purpose to see how he would take getting hit.
Coach.
And the coach's argument was he wanted to see the dedication on their end and to let them know that sometimes it's going to hurt getting hit. That is the most messed up thing I have ever heard in my entire life. And yes, I'm a parent of a 10-year-old who has been playing baseball since he's five. Started T-ball, then went to coach pitch. But I cannot imagine the first time that this young one is playing baseball. Coach pitch, goes to a practice, and his coach hits him, and the answer is he wants to see how he's going to take getting hit. What is wrong with people today? That is insane. Now, I understand that when you go from coach pitch to kid pitch, kids get hit because now you don't have the security of the coach pitching to you, it's the kids pitching to you. And if you want to go ahead and, you know, in practice, throw a tennis ball at them just so they get used to what it's like to be thrown at or get hit at, but it's a tennis ball, not a baseball. I understand that. I do. But not for somebody who's playing for the first time ever and the coach is going to hit him to see how they react. That's, oh my God. If this coach is listening, what the hell is wrong with you? Who does that to little kids? I never heard of that before. It is messed up.
I mean, Steve, come on. Let's be real on all of this. This is 2023. This definitely shouldn't be going on in any kind of sport, no matter if it's coach pitch or if it's his first time or if it's his 15th time at practice.
Listen, I played baseball my entire life in the 70s and 80s, all right? I got beamed enough by kids. I never got thrown at purposely by adults in practice when I was a kid to see how I would take it. That is messed up.
That's stupid.
That is when you say, I am finding another team to play on. Simply as that. That's what you say. Get me the heck off this team and that coach, and I'm going to go find somebody else to play. And you cannot argue that at all. You cannot tell me that a five, six, or seven-year-old should learn to get hit at that age to see what it's like. No. Are you going to try to scare them so they'll never go into the batter's box because they're going to be afraid of getting hit by their coach? Come on. You don't do that.
What do kids at that age have dedication to anyways? They're just kids. They're just learning.
What is wrong with people today? Who does that? I heard that story today and I almost wanted to throw up. Throw up. You know, part of the problem in sports today anyway is that parents are out of their minds. They are. They're so competitive. I don't know what they look, you know, everything is different than it used to be. All right. Everything is more advanced, more accelerated. Now we're in worlds that everybody wants to play, pick one sport, play 12 months out of the year, dedicate themselves to one sport. Why? Why? If a kid is good enough to play multi-sports, let them play multi-sports, male and females. To me, that's insane. But not anymore. Now, these coaches are saying, you know what? Well, you can go play multiple sports, but, you know, you might not have a spot waiting for you when you come back. What kind of message is that to tell somebody? You know, there used to be a time when, you know, these great athletes could play 3-4 sports at one time and not just have to play one sport. But that's how society has changed now. Travel ball, play year-round, no breaks. Who cares if we burn the kids out? Listen, we're playing 12U baseball. Tonight we got a game, right? In this league, I'm already watching 10 and 11-year-olds snapping curveballs in this league.
Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Exactly. You trying to break their arm? You trying to injure their arm so they never pitch again? I mean, there's no reason why 10 and 11-year-old kids should be throwing curveballs. Probably should be throwing a curveball till you're 14, 15. But now they got fifth and sixth graders throwing curves. And I'm watching these games, watching these kids snap their arms, thinking, well, that's great. They'll never play baseball after a certain age because they're going to break their arms, and that's going to be the end of that. What's the point? To win a baseball game that means nothing? Nothing. The whole point when you're 10 or 11 years old is to play the game, have some fun. But it's gotten to the point now where they're doing things, coaches are doing things to these kids they have no business doing to them right now. None.
Yeah, it's so frustrating, Steve. I can't even imagine being a parent in this kind of atmosphere because at one point you just want these kids to have fun. I mean, where did the kind of competitive nature and the fun leave from all these sports? It seems like nowadays some of these coaches, parents want their kids to be college ready, ready to go play collegiately by the age of 10. And it's like, dude, come on, chill out. These kids don't know what they want yet at this point. Let them decide the route that they take.
That's exactly. So anyway, we got a lot to talk about today. We've got, Christopher Cadilla wants to talk about the Lakers. We could bring that up today during the program. No problem, Chris. We'll talk hoops. Definitely talk Lakers. That'll be fun. Looking forward to that. Looking forward to phone calls. 505-6009. That gets you into the program. We've got two lines available as we get started. Let's go to Adolfo, old friend of the show. Tweets often. Calls in from time to time. Very involved in youth sports. I know that for a fact. Adolfo, welcome back. Good to have you on the show. How you doing?
Steve, Adrian, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I just really want to, like, say this. So whomever this coach is and whomever did this to this kid, one, has no business doing what he's doing. You were completely correct, 1,000% correct, that these kids, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14-year-olds, should not, and I stress it enough, should not be throwing off-speed pitches, curveballs, break, whatever you want to call them, at this age. Because by the time they hit high school, if they hit high school, they will not have an arm. As you know, I have a child. I have two of them playing. One plays on the west side. One plays on the east side. And I stress it to them is that you're going to go out there. You're going to have a good time with it. Play the game hard. Play the way you're supposed to play. But you will not, and I stress this enough, you will not throw curveballs at this age.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to happen because one of them is already playing. They're both playing middle school ball, and I can honestly tell you they don't throw off speed pitches and breaking balls and at this age correctly because they don't know how to. And if you think you know how to, you're wrong, completely wrong. Second, this kid should not. The dad or the mom or the parent should pull this kid off this team immediately because this is the only thing that they're going to cause to this kid is that they're going to hate this game as they grow up. And then you wonder why? we can't get enough kids involved in youth sports. It's because of coaches like this. And there's many of them out there.
Yep.
There's many of them out there. But you got to get this kid into the right system, into the right group, because they are going to kill the love. They're going to kill his love for the game.
Absolutely. And they're going to scare the kid. I mean, can you imagine you're playing for the first time and your coach wants you to sit in there and then he's going to get thrown at so he can see how you take it? I mean, what is that?
I've never met a coach at any level that will throw at a kid, especially if they know it's their first. It doesn't matter. If it's their first practice and coach pitch, and what? Are we throwing real balls at him? Are we throwing tennis balls at him? What are we doing? Like, he is there to learn.
Yep.
And it is our responsibility to teach him, to correct him, but not scare him half to death. And then this kid's never going to come back. And then you wonder why they jump team to teams and team to team and team to team and team to team. And they hate it. And then they don't want to play. And then the parents want to live through the kid. And they want to live their youth through them because they weren't good enough when they were younger. And they want him to play college ball when they're 10 years old. I'm sorry, but I don't buy it. And that's all I have to say.
Appreciate you, Adolfo. Always good to hear from you. Thanks for the call. Thanks for weighing in. Adolfo and I are 100% on the same page. 100% on the same page. I would love to have somebody call and give me the opposite approach and give me the other take. Why you should be throwing at kids playing for the first time. At any level. I mean, come on. And even if you're going to throw a tennis ball at him, you're going to try to bean a five-year-old just to see how he takes a pitch? First off, the whole point of coach pitch is these kids get in there, and because the coaches are pitching, the kids trust the coaches, they get more and more confidence, and then when they eventually get weaned off of coach pitch to kid pitch, then they have to adjust and learn what it's like to hit kids by the time they're 8 years old. So there's a difference. You spend the first few years, you go from T-ball to coach pitch, then you go to 8U, 9U, 10U, so that you've adjusted, you've made the right adjustment. I mean, it's not rocket science. So when I heard this story earlier today, I almost threw up. Because, I mean, 5-6-year-old kids never played ball before. This is the first thing they learn. He's right. You're not going to want to play the game again.
Right, and that could scar the kid for the future when it comes to sports and athletics, especially knowing it was his first time. Imagine that first impression. Hey, there's violence on the baseball diamond if I go out to practice. No, that's not what any of these kids should think, when they go to practice on a day-to-day basis, when they go to games. Hey, we get it. Accidents happen. This was intentional right here, Steve. And one of the other things that's really frustrating to me personally is just knowing that he does this to try to get some kind of dedication character. Characteristics out of the kid. No, there's other ways you could teach dedications or see signs of dedications from your athletes instead of doing things like that.
Mm-hmm. I know. All right, just getting started on the program. Quarter past here today. 505-6009, that is our telephone number. I am seeing boxing coming up on the Twitter handle. I am seeing basketball. We'll talk about all that today as well. We can get more into youth sports if you'd like to do that. You know what I would like to do? I'd love to hear the horror stories about youth sports today. If you were involved on a team and have a story to share, either your team or an opposing team, that not only crossed the line but is frankly disturbing, hey, give us a call. I'd love to hear youth sports horror stories today on the show. 505-6009, with you till 6:30. Then it's Chihuahuas baseball as we go to Charlie One. Let's get a traffic update. 20 past the hour as we continue here on Sports Talk. 505-6009, that's our telephone number. You on into the show, 505-6009. Tweet us, 600ESPN El Paso. Message us on our mobile app, powered by First American Bank. El Paso Visuals Deportes checks in. Context is important, LOL. How hard did the coach throw the ball? Underhand? And also, how did the kid take it? Did he hit a home run after? First off, you're as messed up as the situation itself, Deportivos. All I can tell you is this. The kid was 7 years old. He played T-ball, never played organized baseball, but just played T-ball. Was hit with baseballs in the leg. All right? So the coach purposely threw at the kid's leg with a baseball. Not a tennis ball. Not underhanded, but threw a pitch at the kid and told the kids, don't move. Think about that for a second. That's also messed up. Because if you're playing organized ball and there's a ball at you, the first thing you do is get the hell out of the way. You don't want to get hit. That's not the object of the game. Nobody wants to get hit. So you're telling a kid in practice, don't move. But what you're really thinking is, I'm going to hit you, and I want to see how you react. Come on. It's coach pitch. It's not kid pitch. It's coach pitch. And even if it was kid pitch, and you want to teach kids how to take how to get hit and what it feels like, hit them with a tennis ball and lob it at them. Don't fire baseballs at kids at this age, 7 years old. Come on. It makes no sense. None.
Do they think this is going to build character? Do they think this is going to try to build dedication, all that? Because that's not the case. I mean, if coach thinks that way, then they have to change their whole educating, coaching strategies around all of this, Steve, because that's ridiculous. How do you go out there, hit a kid, tell him to stay still, and do that so you could try to teach him a lesson? No, that's not teaching anybody a lesson. It just discourages and gives negative, a negative impact on them throughout that practice.
Let me tell you this. I think we spent 2 years, two full years, four seasons playing coach pitch, okay? Playing the same team, same coach. And that coach did everything he could for the players. And the first thing he did was when he threw to them, he pitched to contact, meaning he would try to do everything he could to make every kid hit the ball, get more and more confidence in their abilities, and grow as hitters. And then by the time they graduate from coach pitch to kid pitch, they learn a little bit what it's going to be like when a live arm throws at you and you don't know where the ball's going. Which, by the way, is like that for the rest of these kids' lives. Okay, so the truth is, once kids are pitching to each other, nobody has great control. You never know. You might throw one pitch over the plate and then hit another kid in the next pitch. But what I'm trying to tell you is, the whole point of coach pitch is for kids to have confidence, build confidence, learn the game. A coach is pitching to them, not to hit them and see how they respond. Coach is pitching so they can learn to hit the ball and then get more confidence built up. So when they do go play kid pitch, then they can adjust because they already know how to hit the baseball. So, yeah, it's that's I don't know what to say. I mean, I'm at a loss. I really am. I am at a loss. So if you have, stories like this you want to share from youth sports, whether it's now or years ago, hey, I got two lines available. Would love to hear from you. 505-6009. You see what you get to look forward to when you have a child, boy or girl, man. Adrian, this is what you get to be a part of.
Maybe they could do other things. Maybe sports is not the thing. So even if, or maybe we won't have kids. Maybe that's this lesson you're trying to teach me here, Steve. Don't even, avoid all this kind of drama right here. I dealt with my share of issues when I was playing flag football, basketball as a youth member. I remember this one time, it was a championship game. Opposing parent told one of the players to go and punch the best player on our team in the face and knock him out of the game. Well, he did it. He punched the kid. I remember him coming to the sideline, this kid punching one of our players in the face, knocking him out of the game. And as a result, the parent was kicked out of the league. So
that's the craziest thing I've ever heard.
Yeah, it was a terrible story.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, super drama.
That's a big one itself. Okay, look, I got a line ringing in. 25 past. You want two lines are ringing in now. You want in. We'd love to hear from you. Again, we'd love to get your stories. I'm sure many of you have stories from youth sports. It's just wild. It really is. Adolfo was fired up to start the show. He had a lot to say, and Adolfo was not happy. Not happy, but he understands because he's seen it too. He's been there. He knows. He knows. One line open, 505-6009. You can tweet the show, 600-ESPN El Paso. That is 600-ESPN El Paso on Twitter. Let me go to Gator Richard. He's joining us. Gator Richard, what's going on?
Go Gators.
Go Gators.
I'm wearing a new Gator shirt right now, man.
Good for you. Where'd you get it?
I don't know. My kids gave it to me.
That's nice of them. Good to see they still take care of you after all these years. Richard, I like that.
Yeah, giving back, you know.
There you go.
All the years of Little League and cheerleading and all that.
That's right. Least they could do is outfit you for the rest of your adult life with Gators gear every so often. That's right.
Yeah. And I'm drinking coffee out of a Gators mug.
Good.
How about that?
Good. Yeah, that's I would expect nothing less from you. That's excellent. What's going on?
All right. So, negative reinforcement. I mean, I'll just put it out there, man. When my son was playing Little League, you know, I'd say, "Rich, no hit, no dinner," right? And you know, that'd get a chuckle out of some of the parents, and my son would just look at me and kind of smirk. Because he knows, you know, he knows he's going to eat. You know what I mean? But
would he get? Would he usually? Would he usually get a hit when you threaten not to eat? You know, feed him after an at bat.
Well, yeah, my son was, you know, he loved to pitch, and you know, I kind of explained to him. I said, look, your at bats, every at bat counts. Okay. You only get so many at-bats in a game. There's only so many games in a season.
Yeah.
And then you spend the off season thinking about it. So make every at-bat count. You know, if you got two strikes, choke up. You know, be tough, get a hit, right?
Yeah.
And you met my daughter a few months back. She's playing softball right now. So I did that, you know, hey, no hit, no dinner. And, you know, everybody was kind of like, wow, Dad, that's pretty harsh, you know. And I'm like, you should see how this girl eats anyways. She can do the skip a meal or two, right? Anyways, it's all in good fun, okay? The negative reinforcement, I don't know. Now, you're talking about like...
Would you, how about this? If you're coaching a team and your son or daughter was on and they were seven, would you be trying to hit them purposely in the leg to see how they would take it?
No, heck no.
See, that's what I'm saying. Yeah,
we're talking about like incidents that happen like in Little League or youth sports. So, watch this. My son was playing catcher, okay, Little League, okay, not coach pitch. I think he was eight, but he was playing in the 12 and under.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, in fact, no, it was before he started playing. It was after he played with Butch's team. I think I mentioned that to you once, that he played with Butch Henry when he was coaching Little League.
Okay.
And anyways, it was for a different team right after that. Anyhow, watch this. My son's playing catcher, and the ball was hit out to, I think it was like right center. Anyways, the relay's coming in. Well, the coach, the third base coach, the head coach, he says, "Run him over," and my son's catching, right? He tells this big kid, right, probably like an 11, 12-year-old. Mm-hmm. My son was eight. He tells the kid, "Run him over," at home. Now, Little League, it's a requirement to slide.
Yeah,
you can't run anybody over, especially coming home. You have to slide if it's, you know, if it's going to be close. I mean, if it's.
Yeah, this is not Pete Rose, Roy Fossey in the 1971 All-Star game. I get it.
Correct. Now watch this. The relay comes in. My son catches the ball. Like, this kid's not even halfway. He's, or let's say halfway,
mm-hmm.
but he's running full speed. He doesn't let up, and he's coming full speed, not gonna slide. And my son's standing there, like, you know, with his legs in a wide leg stance,
mm-hmm.
holding the ball with two hands. In the glove, the kid comes in and he's going to try to run my son over, and he does like a, not like, well, kind of like a stiff arm. Boom! He puts both hands out, hits the kid in the chest, and he falls flat on his back. Helmet pops off. The crowd was going nuts. Like you get the, you know, from the opposing team's parents. And I mean, that coach told him,
yeah,
run him over. Now, I was, you know, if you've ever been to Sports Park, okay, Sportsplex, you can actually sit up top and look down on some, you know, some of the fields, right? So I was up top and I heard that and I yelled to Coach Eddie. I said, hey, he told him to purposely run over the catcher, man. I mean, that's a no-no.
Yep.
Right? And
yeah.
And the umpire the umpire really didn't hear it, but everybody else did. The parents from both bleachers heard it, right? So they stopped the game, and we got the Sportsplex dude, you know, involved, and they actually kicked that coach out. They kicked him out of the game.
Good.
And that
they kicked the kid out?
They kicked, well, the kid was the coach's son anyhow. See what I mean?
Yeah, I got you. I got you. First off, I'm happy that had a good ending. I hope your kid hung on to the ball and they called the kid out.
He did.
Good.
It was phenomenal. But
good. Good.
Yeah, those are the little things you remember from youth sports, right?
But it's true. I appreciate it. Hey, I got to get to a Sports Center update. A good story. And, you know, these are the kind of things. They happen all the time. Happened years ago. They're going to keep happening. And Richard brought up a really good story going home. All right, 32 passed. I got Dan waiting next. 505-6009 as we send it back to Adrian for a Sports Center update.
You know, it was Little League, then Bronco, then Pony, then you could get cold, but cold usually you're playing high school ball. So,
what year are we talking about here? Give me an era. Give me an era.
We're talking early 70s.
Okay, so we're going back almost 50 years. Okay, good start.
Almost 50 years. Yeah, and 11 years old, we're playing. And you know what the funny thing is? That person is a so-called justice of the peace now. We're playing at the Lower Valley Optimist, which doesn't exist anymore. And, he made a bet with another coach that we could beat him. We ended up losing. The following day in practice, he got a friend and, he chased us around the bases with a horse because we lost, because he had lost some money. And, I think it was like about six times until finally one of the kids, you know, one of the slowest kids just couldn't run anymore. So, the horse kind of stepped on the, you know, I'm not going to say he kicked him or stepped on him, but the horse brushed him. And that was the end of that. You know, back 50 years ago, you didn't go cry to your parents. I didn't tell them about getting chased by a horse because we lost and. But I guess
let me get this straight. This was not a teammate of yours. This was the coach of your team.
No, this was the teammate that got kind of stepped on, but the coach was so angry that he got a friend of his that owned horses. So he got,
he got
a couple of the riders and he chased us around the bases
So the coach thought you were going to win. Did he actually make a monetary bet and lose?
That's what happened, and that's what he was angry because I heard him talking to the assistant coach, and he says, well, that took away from my drinking money last night.
So he made a bet with somebody, maybe the opposing coach or whatever.
It was the opposing coach, okay. Right. Uh-huh.
They made a bet, he lost, and as a result, he decided to have somebody that had horses come to your practice and chase you around the field for however long it was.
It was a long time. I know I remember running the bases eight times myself.
Oh, my God. With horses chasing you while you're running the bases?
Oh, yeah. Of course. Yes, sir.
And one of your teammates got stepped on by a horse.
Yeah, he got brushed. I mean, he really didn't get stepped on. But
so who's the injustice of the peace? Your former coach or the guy or the kid that got brushed?
No, the former coach is now a JP.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
So every time that he would come around and everything, I just would tell him, you know, man, horses. And I go, get out of here. I don't want to see your face again.
Yeah, I don't blame you.
And that's the only guy that coach or teacher or former whatever that I could not, I cannot stand. And I go, how the heck without Burley, just a high school education, you can become a justice of the peace? You know, but that's the story, you know, and like I said, I will never forget that. I mean, so we're 50 years, it's still fresh in my mind.
Sounds like it. All right, Dan.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sure that makes you angry. I appreciate the call. Yeah, Dan's not, Dan will never forget that story. Can you imagine? That's like something out of the Bad News Bears. Your coach bets that you're going to win. He loses the bet and decides to punish the team by having them run bases with horses chasing after them.
That's savagery. That's barbaric.
That is sick.
Yeah, and I'm looking. There's 7 Justice of the Pieces here in El Paso.
How many are male?
Be, 5.
All right, so it could be one of these 5.
Yeah, one of those 5. Yeah. That's right. I feel actually, I shouldn't laugh at this. This is a horrible thing right here that Dan just told us, but he brought a little light to it, so I guess I'll chuckle a little.
Mm-hmm. I believe it. I believe it. So anyway, yeah. Listen, it's just the way it is. Sometimes these kind of stories, these are the stories we want to hear because I'm happy they've happened. Here's the thing. They've been going on since the beginning of time, all right? 50 years ago, and now here we are all these years later, same crazy stuff.
Yeah, it's sad that we haven't learned from our mistakes. These are child sports that we're talking about. We're talking about kids here in El Paso who are just trying to learn and have fun. I mean, come on. That's what's frustrating, at least for me, with all of this.
I'm with you. All right. 39 after the hour as we continue here on Sports Talk. 505-6009. When we come back, we'll talk about the NBA, what happened last night, and continue with our discussion as we take you up till Chihuahua's baseball coming up in a few hours when Hags joins us here at the bottom of the 6 o'clock hour. More in a moment, 600 ESPN El Paso. Back here on Sports Talk as we continue. 46 pass right now. 505-6009. That is our telephone number to get into the program. We've asked for stories. That's exactly what we've been getting. A lot of youth sports stories that some people haven't probably shared in 50 years. Others that just happened recently. Something we've talked about in our first hour. No guests today. It's all open. Open topics. Open lines. And Adrian, listen, the point is this. When it comes to youth sports, all right, things happen that would probably shock you. And yet, as you could hear from that last call we had from Dan, crazy things have been going on as long as you could even remember and as far as youth sports go.
Yeah, it's so interesting because when you're in it and you experience a lot of these, like I'm just trying to remember some of the drama and antics that happened when I was playing youth sports. Mm-hmm. When you're living it, you don't really reflect on it. But it's like the parents and the coaches who have to deal with it all the time. My pops was the one who coached our like flag football team. So he would get a lot of the pushback on a lot of these things from parents or from players and stuff like that. So, hey, I feel for all of them out there.
I do too. All right, 48 pass. We'll keep it moving with Eddie, who's next up on the show. Eddie, thanks for the call. Welcome aboard. How are you today?
Good. How are you, Steve?
Good. Thanks, Eddie.
Yeah, this is back in the 70s. I was 11. This was our 11 and 12-year-old baseball league. And we had a coach that was, he was related to some friends of the family that are still friends now, but they got divorced, so we didn't see him much. But
okay,
he started our practices with, he would put us against the backstop and maybe like a little bit past home plate, just against the backstop. And he was about maybe a little bit past the pitcher's mound, and he would hit us line drives. He would just, I mean, they would come, they were coming fast. And it was
how old were you at the time?
I was 11, and then I had a big brother on the team. He was 12. He was a so my big brother, he was an older 12-year-old. So he was born in September. So he was 13 in September. So he still played with the 12-year-olds. But he was a mm-hmm. bigger kid. He mm-hmm. was an all-star pitcher. So he had a way to have a good ending to the story. Anyway, his coach would put us against the backstop and hit us line drives. And then one Saturday, we showed up to practice where he put us out on the field, and he took half the kids down a couple of blocks to McDonald's, and he left the rest of us out on the field. He never came back. We never know what happened, and it was just really weird. And then
He took half the team to McDonald's and fed them, and then the other half had to just fend for themselves and find a way to go back home?
Yeah, because some of the other kids, I mean, they were all friends, and were like, what happened on Saturday? He's like, he took us to McDonald's, and then he just left us out in the field. And
what happened? Was like, but like, was he so mad at you that he just packed up half the kids and said, okay, you come with me and everybody else stay here, and then he just left?
It was like random. I have no idea why he picked who he picked. It was just really weird.
That is weird. These are all weird stories. I like it. It's bizarre.
Yeah. Well, then he put us against the backstop and was like, this is like too close, and he was hitting his line drive.
Anybody get hit?
I got hit. a couple of us got hit. And then, like I said, my brother was the older kid. He was like the captain of the team. He was like an all-star pitcher. As a 12-year-old, he organized everybody's parents. And then the next practice, I mean, we had a few practices with his coach. But then before the season started, then one day before the next practice, he himself, my big brother, he gathered all these parents and came down to the field for practice. We practiced at a school, and they all ran him off the field. And we got a new coach. We got a parent that wasn't really
crazy,
an experienced baseball coach, and he coached us. And I just thought it was really cool how my big brother was the one who organized it and got the parents, and we ran them off the field.
Good for you. At least that story has a happy ending. I appreciate it, Eddie. It's probably therapeutic even mentioning it. But thanks for the call. Thanks for sharing. Hey, Bo Bagley is with us right now, and apparently he's got a story to end hour number one on the program. Bo, I'm looking forward to hearing what you have to say today.
Steve and Adrian, how are you? I heard this topic, and the number one thing that came to my mind was the final day of his life. The Strells was at a youth baseball game over near Coronado High School. And I was courting his youngest daughter. And we were over there seeing my future nephew play. And this was in April of 2013. And there's the Strells in all of his glory after Diablo's games and minor basketball and everything he's been associated with. He was there talking smack to the umpire and the opposing. And it was awesome. I'm not condoning the umpires at all or anything, but the Strells was in his full glory. The opposing coach, you're going to the majors, coach. You're going to the majors. It was just absolutely awesome. Actually, Laura asked me to come sit next to her. I told her, no, I'm having too much fun sitting next to your dad. So the final day of his life, the Strells talking smack at a youth baseball game to the umpire and the opposing coach.
That's fitting. That is fitting. I wish I would have been there to hear that, but I did get to hear the Strells many years at UTEP basketball games, giving it to opposing coaches and officials as well. But the fact that he did it at a youth baseball game over at Coronado on the last day of his life makes Paul Strelzin even more legendary than he was prior to your phone call. I love that. Love that.
Absolutely.
Did the opposing coach react to the Strells when he was heckling him?
Through the fence, he looked at him. He said, "Strells, man, what do you want me to do? Come on. You know, stop busting my balls here."
That's awesome. That is awesome.
But the Strells was being the Strells, and it was absolutely awesome to see. And I just thought about youth sports, and I thought about that moment. A great moment for El Paso, I thought.
Good job, Bo. Way to end the hour on a high note. I appreciate that. Thank you.
You got it. Take care.
Oh, that's good stuff. Paul Strelzin, last day of his life at a youth baseball game, giving it to the umpire and the opposing coach.
That's a goat right there. That's amazing stuff.
It's hard to beat that one. It really is. All right. When we come back, hour number two here on Sports Talk, the Lakers. That much closer to getting into the second round of the playoffs. If you missed last night, we'll tell you what happened. We'll give you a little update on what's going to be happening tonight, and to get to more phone calls as we continue. Right here, 600 ESPN El Paso. Second hour, going to be even better. 505-6009, that is our telephone number to get into the program today. 505-6009. Aaron Rodgers gets introduced at noon El Paso time tomorrow for his Jets introductory press conference. Full beard, or do you think he shaves it and goes clean shaven for his Jets presser?
I think he goes clean shaven. He wants to show the New York media. This is all a guess. He maybe wants to show the New York media he's bringing a little youth back. He's turning back the clock, going to number 8, which was his Cal number. So maybe they stick with that theme. He shaves off the beard. The interesting part to me, Steve, is Pat McAfee going to moderate this? Because it feels kind of weird if it's New York media asking all the questions to Aaron Rodgers.
I think McAfee's going to be on air during the presser at the time. I really do. It would have been awesome if they would have, Rodgers would have said that McAfee is coming in with him. That would be epic if it happened like that.
Yeah, I guess FanDuel TV, it's paying the bills for Pat McAfee right now, so can't necessarily step away to do this with Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah, that's very true. Very, very true. But that's coming up tomorrow, folks. So the draft is on Thursday. The Foss will join us with Chris Fernandez at some point tomorrow during the show. Excited about that. And then they'll be with us from Radio Row the rest of the week out in Kansas City as they travel tomorrow to KC to cover the NFL draft. And that's going to be fun. They're actually crashing at the home of former Major League Baseball veteran outfielder Brian McCray. And for those of you that have followed the game of baseball back in the 80s and 90s, I'm sure many people are familiar with Brian, the son of Hal McCray. So he is a second generation big leaguer, had a nice career in the major leagues himself, and yeah, they're staying at his house. Isn't that the greatest?
How what's the connection? How does Foss know everybody? I don't get this.
Not only does he know everybody, but like he just goes and stays at their place. That's the best part about it. Like, you know, it's one thing, like, I know a lot of people, right? But to know people and then to ask to stay at their residence are two completely different things.
Right, because at that point, you have to be close. You have to be, yes. You have to have some sort of friendship. And it's not like you could just call up an acquaintance and just say, hey, can I crash on your couch or something like that?
Or you just don't care. Let's be honest. That's it, too. I don't know. Maybe athletes have this brotherhood where they feel like, you know, once an athlete, always an athlete, and you can just crash with them whenever, whatever the situation is.
Okay, I'm okay with that right there. But there is a chance that Foss overpromised when he hit up Brian McCray. He overpromised and said, hey, look, I can get you to the pre-draft activities. I can get you out to the fan experience stuff. Just come, let me crash at your place. So maybe this was, you know, mutually beneficial for Brian McCray as well.
Could be. Could very well be. So, and they're the same age, which is also pretty cool. You know, Brian McCray spent 10 years in the bigs, played with the Royals, Cubs, Mets, Rockies, and Blue Jays. So
solid career, man.
Yes.
10-year career right there. That's a name.
And
that's
he's also a career 261 hitter. So he hit well, had a couple of good seasons. Probably, you know, his best season might have been, gosh, I mean, there's a couple of good ones. But in 1998 with the Mets, he batted 264 with 21 home runs and 79 RBIs, and he added 20 stolen bases. So he had a 2020 season with the Mets. And then a few years earlier with the Cubs, 276, 17 home runs, and 37 stolen bases. How about that?
Wow, that's good stuff. And he also played alongside some really big players. I'm just making sure the timeline's right. Looks like Bo Jackson was one of his teammates when he was with KC. That's pretty cool.
When he broke in, that's exactly right. That is exactly right. So, yeah, it's pretty neat. So the fact that the Foss and as he calls him, B-Mac, are still so close, that's just adds to the legend of who Steve Foster is.
Yeah, and he'll say, oh, you want to get him on the show? I got you. When do you want him? Today? Tomorrow? I got you. Don't worry.
How about Chris Fernandez? Is he like always the plus one with the Foss? Is that pretty much? I feel sorry for Chris because Chris, you know, he's a little older than Steve. He knows the same people, but I always feel like, you know, he's just, it's part of the package, right? I mean, you know, maybe Chris likes that. He knows that, hey, when I'm hanging out with Foss, I never have to worry about a place to stay. I never have to worry about my meals. Like, I'm taken care of. I'm covered.
I don't know, man. Chris is somebody who usually drives when it comes to the travel with Foss. He has to deal with Foss as well. So I don't
know. That's tough.
I mean, it's a catch and trade. And I feel like with Chris, just knowing him, he's a great guy, nice person. He probably bites his tongue on a lot of these situations. And then behind closed doors, he probably tells Foss, hey, Foss, you shouldn't have done that. You know, he probably keeps him in check.
I hope so. I really do. But anyway, they're going to be joining us the rest of the week from Kansas City in the NFL draft. Looking forward to those two and to being a part of the show. Meanwhile, tonight we have a triple header of NBA playoff hoops starting in about 20 minutes. Hawks and Celtics on TNT. Boston trying to close this out at home, leading 3-1. Then you got the Nugs. That's right, 7 o'clock. Nuggets trying to do the same thing to the Wolves. They lead 3-1 in Denver. And finally, at 8 o'clock tonight, Phoenix trying to finish off the depleted Clippers, up 3-1. That's the 8 o'clock TNT game. The Nuggets and T-Wolves will be on NBA TV. So those are your three games tonight. Last night, how about what the Lakers were able to do getting past the Grizzlies in overtime? It wasn't easy, but look at what LeBron ended up doing. 22-20-7. Again, you know, this is a guy that you're saying, well, if he's on the downside of his career, that's still better than pretty much 90% of the league these days in general.
He's not a, well, I want to caution, like, I always toss in my head, Steve, is LeBron James still a top five player in the league? And nights like last night are, it reaffirms that he probably is still at this point of his career. He's 38 years old. He has done it for the Lakers. He's already won a title with the Lakers. But it feels like, especially from last night's game out at Staples, or now called Crypto.com Arena in LA, it felt like the crowd for the first time in his Lakers career was really behind him. And I think that's a huge thing for LeBron James, because he's always tried to get and earn the trust, earn kind of the loyalty from the Lakers fans. And hey, it's been tough. LeBron was the guy who ended up trading all their young pieces a couple years ago in order to get Anthony Davis. He was also that same guy who traded guys like Kyle Kuzma, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope for somebody like Russell Westbrook from the Wizards. So questionable decision making throughout his process with the Lakers, and it's all culminating up to this event right here. It's the first round play series against the Grizzlies. They already came in as a play-in team. They're the 7th seed. Yet yesterday they take over and take control, and it was a bad Anthony Davis game. What you could argue is the Lakers should have lost that game, no doubt about it. Desmond Bain went off yesterday for the Grizz. And Ja Morant, say what you want. I mean, he's flying around, driving inside the paint. The play, the game plan was right for Memphis yesterday. And it's just LeBron James stepping up in a crucial situation, showing up. Guys like Dylan Brooks, who has been talking smack this entire series. This is why I love LeBron. I mean, this is why I love watching the Lakers every single game, because you get nights like these, which are definitely memorable and stand out.
And the truth is this, okay? When Michael Jordan was 38 years old, he was playing in Washington. He came out of retirement for the second time in his career. And although I don't know if the first time would be considered retirement, maybe he just took a break, and that's how you describe it. But I mean, he's averaging 23 a game for Washington. He's shooting 41% from the field. He, you know, was, I mean, and before he left, he was 28, 29, 30 a game. So you could tell by the age of 38, the decline was already in play for MJ. I mean, LeBron is 38. He's dropping 29 a game, along with 8 rebounds and 7 assists. He's 38 years old, folks. And that's what's so amazing to me, is that I keep waiting to see the skills start to go and decline and start to be like Jordan was at the age of 23. And, you know, Michael started out of college. I think he came out after his junior season in North Carolina. LeBron started at the age of 19. So he's been doing this for 20 years already. 20 years, and he's never averaged less than 21 points a game. And that was his rookie season. So you think about the production. And you feel like, look, to me, I always say the GOAT is Michael Jordan, okay? It is. He's clutch. He, you know, had he not taken that break, who knows how many more championships he would have won with the Bulls, whether it was the year he played baseball or the year after and the years after. LeBron is like, if you just look at the body of work, forget the championships, all right? Forget the championships, but just the production, there's no comparison. You give it to James because he hasn't slowed down in 20 years. That's amazing. It's not, he's doing what most of the best athletes in the world could never do, and that is play at this level for two decades and not even give us a glimpse of what it would be like to slow down or at least see your skills erode. It's nothing short of phenomenal.
Right, 9 straight finals appearances for me just in the 2010s. There's never going to be a team athlete like that on a team in any sport, in my opinion, who you can just pencil in every single year to go to the finals like we did with LeBron James. And yeah, you can make arguments, well, the East was not as strong or all those kind of things, and he lost some of those finals. I get that. But to have the consistency, to have the continued success, to never go down with injuries or things like that, always emphasize durability. People want to say LeBron James, you know, they not really knowing who he is, want to say he's a ball hog or it's all about him. He makes his teammates better. Those 6 assists or 7 assists that you were just mentioning right there, he's making players around him better. And LeBron, I'm just really impressed with him, especially from last night. Do they have a finals ahead of them? Probably not. Can they make it to the Western Conference final? Maybe. But I'm still very impressed on how they're dealing with the 3rd seed in Memphis Grizzlies in this series right here.
Especially when you go ahead and, you know, look at just their production in this postseason. Now look at what happened last night, for example. Everybody in double figures in the starting lineup, okay? Everybody. But Anthony Davis didn't have a big game.
4 turnovers.
And he was 4-for-13 from the field. He scored 12 points. I mean, you know, but they picked him up. LeBron, 22-20-7. We mentioned that. How about what Reeves was able to do yesterday? 23 points, and you saw his production. D'Angelo Russell came back, and he gave you 17 points and 3 assists. I was going to say assists. Nobody really passes the ball other than LeBron. Doesn't it seem like that?
Yeah, it does. I mean, Austin Reeves is that playmaker as well, which I really like that they have that secondary option. But yeah, it's really LeBron sharing the ball. I think moving forward in the rest of the playoffs, you look ahead to next series. If it's Lakers-Warriors, that could be one of the highest rating second round series we've seen a long time out of the NBA playoffs.
How about Dennis Schroeder? He goes 30 minutes yesterday, scores 12 points, but he finishes with a plus 24. So that means that in the 30 minutes he was on the court, the Lakers outscored the Grizzlies by 24 points. That is I like the plus minus numbers. It tells you something because stats don't always tell the story, Adrian, and sometimes you could be out there, not have a huge point production game, but when you've got a plus 24, that means that when you're out on the court, good things happen.
Right, and I look at, on the flip side of that, who's not producing? D'Angelo Russell, and I've said this, for weeks now, but he's the one guy I'm really worried about for the Lakers because while Dennis Schroeder comes off the bench, plays crunch time minutes and significant minutes for the Lakers, feels like D'Angelo Russell's kind of holding them back. I mean, you talk about plus minus, yesterday Jimmy Butler and what he was able to do against the Bucks, dropping 56 in a huge game when Giannis came back.
I want to talk about that, by the way. That's amazing.
That's huge. Plus minus right there. He had an amazing performance just talking about yesterday's standouts.
Some will call it one of the greatest postseason games ever. I mean, and we'll talk about what he did because you're right. Single-handedly willed the Miami Heat to victory over the Bucks when Milwaukee was up 14 in the fourth quarter, looking to even that up at 2 games apiece, which we're going to get to after the break because it's already at 16 past here on Sports Talk. Plus, tweets are still coming in. Alexa D, she's got a youth sports tweet. We'll read that when we come back on the program. Phone calls as well, 505-6009, as we send it right back over to Charlie One. Let's get this traffic update. 505-6009, our telephone number. You can also tweet the show, 600-ESPN El Paso. That's what Alexa Dominguez did a little while ago when she talked about youth sports, said youth sports back 20 to 30 years ago was a different era, and things were more acceptable. A paddle for messing up was a norm. It's good things have changed.
You know, on those lines, Steve, my dad was texting into the show. He reminded me of this story when he was at Moorhead. They did something bad in football. He was playing football at the middle school level, and he had a psycho coach, an assistant psycho coach that would just berate them all the time. Well, one day, as the coach was driving to practice, this is a gruesome story, he sees roadkill on the side. He pulls over. He cuts the tail off this animal, and he waves it in players' faces throughout the practice. And tries to get them to encourage them to go hard. I can't believe that story right there. But I remember him telling me that, and he just reminded me over text.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, horrible.
Pulls over, cuts the tail off a dead animal.
Yes.
And then decides to wave it at the team.
Think about it. Like, if you're wearing a helmet, face mask, he's, like, waving that in your face.
Oh, my goodness.
It's gross.
That's, yeah. That is pretty bad. It's not good. So, anyway, I'm old enough to say that when I was in school, we never really, I never saw a lot of paddles for discipline, but I did see plenty of kids get hit by big, thick rulers back in the day. You know, those real big ones you had, not the thin, little, 12-inch rulers, the bigger ones, the wood ones.
Oh, man.
I saw those do a little
like damage. Yardsticks?
Yeah,
kind
basically
of
like a good yardstick. Oh, yeah.
That's no fun. So,
no. Well, don't screw up. All right. Anyway, as we continue here on the program, one of the kids used to go to the bathroom all the time, right? And like in grade school, couldn't stop like going to the bathroom. And we always wondered, like, what's going on? So my teacher finally had enough. And she one day just assigned like all of the different chairs in class. So she boxed him in where he was not able to escape. Once he was in,
man.
That was it. And if he had to go, which I think he did, teacher said, just go in your pants. I don't care. And that
was
yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Not fun.
No,
not
well,
fun. Jeez.
No.
Well, I guess you can't lie and just say you're going to the restroom and just mess around. You
that's
know?
That's right. That's exactly. 25 past as we continue here on Sports Talk. All right. So last night, Milwaukee looked for a good chunk of that game. Like they were going to beat Miami on the road and tie that series up at 2-2. Giannis was back. Everything was good. But Jimmy Butler had something to say about this. In fact, he dropped 56 last night on Milwaukee, 56 points, in what some will call the greatest clutch postseason performance ever. I mean, he was right there, 19 of 28 shooting, 15 of 18 from the line, 9 rebounds. And how about this? This is another great stat. One turnover, one in 41 minutes of play against Milwaukee. To put it in context, only 3 other guys scored in double figures, and really, other than Bam Adebayo's 15, that was about it. I mean, this was a performance for the ages from Jimmy Butler, and, you know, if Miami goes on to win this series, and they now have a 3-1 lead, you can look back on this, and to me, this performance almost cinches Jimmy Butler's name in Miami Heat lore.
Right, and I feel like he should be recognized that way because if Jimmy Butler had hit that three-pointer last year against the Celtics in the Eastern Conference Finals, we could be talking about the Heat trying to go back to the NBA Finals this year. And that's what kind of player Jimmy Butler is. Whenever the postseason comes around, it seems like he elevates his game and takes it to a whole other level. Only three players in the history of basketball have scored more points in a single playoff game than Jimmy Butler. Michael Jordan leads the way with 63 points, and you figure Jimmy Butler was just right behind him, 56 to 63 points. MJ scoring 63 against the Celtics back in the 80s was one of the greatest performances we'll ever see.
And I think, if I'm not mistaken, that was either his rookie year or his second year in the league.
That was 86, so that probably was his rookie or second
season.
No,
it was his third season, okay. I think, third season, because I think he was a rookie. Well, wait a minute now. I think he was a rookie in 84-85. So if it was 85-86, it was his second season.
That's amazing.
So, yeah. second season. And I think he came back from the injured leg to do that in the playoffs against Boston, if I'm not mistaken.
Elgin Baylor is second with 61 points when he scored that 1962 also against the Celtics. Mm. So Donovan Mitchell scored 57 against Denver. That was in the bubble in that victory when he was with the Jazz at the time. And then Jimmy Butler right behind him with 56.
Isn't it sad that nobody really gives any credit to anything that happened in the bubble? Including right. the Lakers winning that title.
Yeah, and I would say that was probably the most pure form of basketball because everybody is just enclosed, not a lot of fans. But then, obviously, there's the travel element that adds a lot of factors to the sport in the playoffs. So, yeah, it's kind of a catch and trade.
Meanwhile, Giannis last night scores 26 points, grabs 10 rebounds, and has 13 assists. He has a triple-double. The problem is he had 6 turnovers in the process, and those turnovers were big. And when you think about it, Adrian, it looked like Milwaukee was in total control, but then the Heat go on a 13-0 run in the fourth to take the lead, and they never look back after that.
Right, and the defense is the biggest issue for me for the Bucks. I mean, it's Jrue Holiday, who's supposed to be one of the top defenders in the league, and he was not able to contain Jimmy Butler. I get it. He's going off, and it's almost impossible to stop. But still, I wish they would get more out of Chris Middleton. I wish they were getting more out of Joe Ingles, who is their late-season acquisition, and they're not really getting anything from those guys. Off the bench, it's really only Bobby Portis Jr. that they can rely on for the Bucks right now.
I mean, Joe Ingles didn't even shoot the ball yesterday in 20 minutes of play. And as far as Middleton goes, just 4 of 12 shooting for 14 points. Look, there was a period of time not that long ago where Middleton was the second best player on this team right behind Giannis. And you need a guy like that to play to those levels if you're going to have a chance to try and get past Miami and win 3 in a row to advance to the second round.
Yeah, and that begs the question, what's going on? What happens in the offseason if they bow out in the first round? This would be a historic upset by the Heat if they were able to accomplish this. And then on the Bucks side of things, it's the Giannis factor that you just try to build around him. But maybe a supporting cast member like Chris Middleton might not be the right fit for this team.
We could also see Knicks Heat in the second round.
Yeah.
If the Knicks take care of business and do get past Cleveland with a 3-1 lead, and then on the flip side, Miami closes out Milwaukee, that would be a very interesting series, to say the least. And with the history that those two teams have, going back to the days of Pat Riley, and then you think about what those wars were like in those years, that would just set up for some terrific basketball.
Yeah, if you think about it, the Knicks are in a perfect place right now because the Celtics and the 76ers are going to beat the crap out of themselves in the second round. Joel Embiid will not have any kind of energy going into the finals, and same with the Celtics. Are you telling me Tatum and Brown will not exert all the energy they have in that second round? That would put the Knicks in a prime position to be in a good place if they can make it all the way to the Eastern Conference Championship, which the road is there for them right now. It's here.
Got to close out Cleveland first.
That's right.
Not easy. Even when you're up 3-1, it's not, not so easy to try to put a team out of their misery. We've seen that in the past. All right. Bottom of the hour as we continue here on Sports Talk. We've got 1 hour to go because at 6:30, it's Tim Haggerty live from the ballpark. And the Chihuahuas and the Salt Lake Bees getting started. But first, let's go to Adrian and get this bottom of the hour Sports Center update. Hey, by the way, this is pretty funny. Aaron Rodgers posted on Instagram a farewell today to Green Bay, but I'm checking his Twitter handle right now, at Aaron Rodgers, the number 12. And one of his likes today was apparently a quote back in January from Zach Wilson on if the Jets were to sign a veteran quarterback. And Wilson said, and I quote, "I'm going to make that dude's life hell in practice every day." So Barstool Sports today came out with a tweet that said, "Welcome to hell, Aaron Rodgers," and he liked it. So I love that. That's hilarious.
Oh, man. He's throwing those subtle jabs. And you know what? I would not be surprised to hear something like that tomorrow. Somebody's going to ask him about the Zach Wilson comments. He's going to have some kind of snide remark. Or he'll flip it and say, "Hey, look, I'm looking forward to working with Zach," which, by the way, we know is not true.
Mm-hmm. That's true. That is true. But that was pretty funny. I got to admit it. Liked that a lot. 34 past the hour as we continue here on the show. 505-6009. That is our telephone number. You can also message us on the program using our mobile app powered by First American Bank. UTEP will be playing Michigan in football in 2026. That's right. UTEP will be going to the Big House. How about this? This is an interesting story as, you know, now that New Mexico State is in Conference USA, UTEP needs an extra game every year to replace the annual Battle of I-10. So what did they do? They picked up Michigan here in 2026, which really works out well for Lane Frank because if our math adds up properly, he will be a freshman at the University of Michigan, assuming he gets in, stays there, and will have a chance to go watch the Wolverines play the Miners in 2026. That is interesting. But you think about historic places UTEP has played over the years in college football, Adrian, and where they've been. You know, they've played a lot of good schools. They've played some Big Ten schools over the years, but I think this will be their first trip to Ann Arbor to take on the Wolverines.
That's exactly correct. It will be their first time. And now we have a little bit of a track record of UTEP diving into the Big Ten and playing some Big Ten opponents in non-conference play. I'll remind people that later this year on September 9th, UTEP will travel to take on Northwestern out of the Big Ten. Next year, UTEP's first game of the season is at Nebraska. The year after that, no Big Ten school, but they do have Texas on the road. Yep. And the year after that, they've got Michigan. So nice little string of Big Ten opponents coming up.
By the way, Miner fans will love this because this is actually comical, okay? Comical. In 2026, in the span of 2 weeks, UTEP plays in Norman against the Sooners, and then 2 weeks later, they play at Michigan. So if you're wondering about how the athletic budget is doing at UTEP right now, there's your answer. Because the truth is, if tickets weren't being sold, or tickets were being sold at a higher clip, we more than likely would not have to be worrying about this right now.
Good point. I mean, you'd have more of those like Southern Utah teams coming to town and taking on the Miners. You might schedule more of a Mountain West team instead, like a Colorado State, which they have next year. But man, looking far into the future, 2028, UTEP's got teams like Nebraska also on their schedule where they're traveling to. But all the way, you look at 2029, I know we're getting really far ahead into all this, but 6 years from now, UTEP will have to play at Nevada, then at Texas, and then Wyoming to close out that non-conference season. So, yeah, it's interesting. There's a lot of hard games for the Miners when you look at the future and all these big money games.
Oh, my God. It's brutal. Brutal. Anyway, yeah, that is a disaster. So, I mean, you're right. Talk about the money games. You mentioned Nebraska in 2024. They also play Tennessee. So you've got Tennessee and Nebraska in 2024. You've got Texas in 2025. Oklahoma and Michigan in 2026. Texas again in 27. Nebraska and Wyoming in 28, but really it's mostly Nebraska. They've got Texas again in 29 and Texas again in 31. So they play Texas 25, 27, 29 and 31.
That's a good thing. I like that. That's
four
a really
times. Yeah, four times in an 8 year period or 6 year period.
Having an opportunity to play on national television at Darrell K. Royal Stadium for the Miners, I think that's a great. Every UTEP player, whether they got blown out at Texas or they played competitive for a little while, everybody who's played the Longhorns has said that's one of their favorite memories of, you know, their college career. Even when we bring them on here on this show, they love that experience.
Yeah, I agree. 38 past as we continue here on Sports Talk. We'll take a timeout, come back, wrap up hour number two in a moment. Stay with us. Continuing here, 600 ESPN El Paso. Let's talk. I want to go a little deeper into the UTEP non-conference opponents for future seasons after the news today about Michigan signing up. Adrian, it is interesting because as we talked about, part of the reason that UTEP is having to play more money games than, you know, they probably would like or fans would like is just because of the lack of income being generated by the football program because they're not drawing any fans to these games, not enough to support everything that they're trying to do. So you think about it, right? This year, UTEP plays 6 home, 6 road games. Next year, it's going to be 7 road games, 5 home games, because the only non-conference home game is going to be Southern Utah, but they're going to have to play at Nebraska, at Colorado State, and at Tennessee. That is a miserable schedule.
Meanwhile, the Tennessee game is in November. So that makes it even worse, Steve, because if you have to actually play for some kind of significant bowl game or try to become bowl eligible at that point, I mean, forget it. If you're having to go to Knoxville and take on the Volunteers at that point, I don't care who they have on their roster.
I'm with you on that one. So next season is going to be just miserable, okay? 2025... they've got 2 road games in terms of non-conference, but no home games yet. They play at Utah State and at Texas. So they need 2 more games, and the bigger question is going to be, even if they get an FCS opponent for one of those dates, who would they get for the second date? Because the last thing you want to do is have to play 7 road games every year. But look at what they're doing in 2026. At Oklahoma, at Michigan, at San Jose State. So you already know that in 2026, they're playing 7 road games. In 2024, they're playing 7 road games. Now, they've already got their 2 home games for 27 when they go up against HCU. Is that...
I think it's Houston Christian.
Okay, so Houston Christian.
Formerly Houston Baptist.
Got it. And then they'll play San Jose State in that return home game on the in 27, and they're at Texas. And then in 28, they're good. They play at Nebraska, home against Utah State, home against Texas State, at Wyoming. And then in 2029, they've got at Nevada, at Texas, home against Wyoming. So the years that at least right now are going to be difficult will be next season and 2026, where they already have their 7 road games and they need to find another home game, and they need 2 more home games for 2025 to avoid having to play 7 road games 3 straight years. This is the result of New Mexico State's home and home series being wiped off the map for non-conference play. So now all of a sudden, UTEP's in a bind because they've got to figure out ways to replace that game. And looking at the future schedules, Adrian, 2024 and 26 are already looking bleak because they've got 3 road games in non-conference of the 4, and 2 of those 3 are against Power 5 monsters.
Yeah, this is ugly. There's no sugarcoating of this whatsoever. This is ugly the way that the schedule looks right now for the future, and I get it. It is what it is because they want to, you know, cash the checks and get some money for the program, which is understandable, but at the same time, if you're a coach, just from a coach's perspective, how are you supposed to operate knowing you've got 7 road games and you got 5 home? Like, that's so tough. If you're a head coach out there.
And as far as the winnable road games, I mean, maybe you beat San Jose State in 2026, but you're not beating Oklahoma and you're not beating Michigan. And next year, good luck with Nebraska, Tennessee, and then Colorado State is always a tough game. So the hard part is this, okay? And the reality of the situation is this. When nobody shows up to watch UTEP play, and you need to have money for that program and that athletic department to operate, you have to then take an extra money game, which you don't want to do. But unfortunately, you have no choice because the money is not coming in through ticket sales the way you want. And, you know, it's a really, really tough spot. I did not realize it was this bad until I took a look at it just now after the Michigan game was announced.
Yeah, and I would also say with this right here, Steve, one of the other concerning parts about having to stack up all these road games, like you were mentioning, maybe San Jose is a win, but when is it that UTEP actually goes on the road, takes on these Mountain West opponents, and beats them outside of New Mexico? It's tough.
It is
like,
tough.
When you're traveling out to California, I don't care how the other team is. Like, you could tell me San Jose State's going to be the worst team out of the Mountain West. Doesn't matter. UTEP traveling on the road in non-conference play is just not a good sign. Against anybody.
And next year, they're going to have a new quarterback. They're going to have a ton of new personnel on both lines. And who knows what they're going to be like next season. So I guess if you're thinking that 2024 is going to be a rebuilding season, why not just take your lumps in the non-conference, huh?
Right, I guess that's the case. And I mean, but how do you continue that momentum?
You don't.
Going into conference play? I mean,
you don't.
Yeah, you just play all your freshmen and stuff like that, get everybody the playing time and exposure, and then cash the checks, and then get on the planes, get ready for Conference USA play.
That's true. That is true. Then again, there's some, I mean, if you're a football fan, hey, and you want to follow and travel to watch the Miners play, you can go to Lincoln, and then you can go to Knoxville, and, you know, you can go to Austin, either in 25, 27, 29, or all three, or 31. Get all those trips to Austin. You get to go to Norman and Ann Arbor in 2026. And then you can go to San Francisco and make the little trip over to San Jose to go watch the San Jose State game.
Okay, now I like how you're talking about this, Steve. And speaking of these travel ideas, we head to Austin. We got to hit up Steve Foster. We were talking about couch surfing earlier. Maybe he could be our plug there.
You're in Austin, Texas. Do you really want to go there and crash at Foss's house rather than have a hotel?
I have a lot of contacts in Austin, including my sister-in-law. I would like to go with Steve Foster just to experience it and just to live to see the other side of it.
I went to school there for 4 years. I've got friends from college who would gladly put me up if I called them. But I am a little intrigued about what it could be like staying over with the Foss for a few days. I'm like you. I'm intrigued. I am.
I want to see what the fridge situation looks like. I want to see what the household looks like. Everything about
Foss. But I've been to his house. I've been to his house to do his radio show.
Oh, that's right. You've seen the man cave.
Have you?
No.
If you went to his house, you might rethink what you just stated on the air. You might.
Really?
Yes.
Okay. Well, that's all right. Maybe it's more about the experience than it is the stay.
I'll tell you what. I'll stay at a hotel. You stay at Foss's. We'll compare notes.
Yes.
And we'll see who comes out on top afterwards. How's that?
That sounds great. All right. Maybe I'll ask Foss if I could do minor talk from his place.
Why not? Why? You can originate from the Foss. I mean, he can join you. He'd be on the show, too. You guys could do like a show together. It'd be fun. All right. Hey, hour number two in the books. Adrian is going to be heading out. Sal Montes will join me for the final 30 minutes as we get you right up to the start of Chihuahua's baseball, with El Paso getting ready to open up a six-game homestand, the first of two six-game homestands with the Salt Lake City Bees. As we continue right here, it's 600 ESPN El Paso.